Welcome to Tee Up Logistics Insights, presented by iDrive Logistics and ShipCaddy. Our hosts take a deep dive into logistics, supply chain, and small parcel shipping with special emphasis on the landscape of the e-commerce industry and behind the scenes of the warehouses supporting the backbone of American business.
This is Jake Wertner. I'm Executive Vice President at iDrive Logistics and super excited to do this podcast today.
Hi, and this is Glenn Gooding, President of iDrive Logistics. And Jake, hey, thanks for having me out to the office. I always love spending time with you.
Yeah, it's been great. We just moved into expanded into our 40,000 square foot office in Lehi, Utah. And it's been great to have you out here and show you around.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I don't appreciate the fact that you didn't give me a map ahead of time, so I've been wandering the halls for the last 2 days.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
I think I finally have it figured out.
Yeah. So today we're going to be discussing carrier contracts, agreements, and what e-commerce shippers need to know in order to have the most successful shipping outcome for their business. So we'll get into some of the basics around carrier contracts. Now, I've been calling it a contract so far. Is it a contract?
No, technically it's not, Jake, and I think it's a good call out by you. Technically, it's a pricing agreement. The definitive way to really get your head around that is if you think anything contained in a carrier pricing agreement is some sort of deviation from their general published tariff. The tariff is, you might as well read tax code. You know, it's complex, it's long, it's confusing oftentimes. They, in essence, have rules, rates, regulations around every iteration that a package might see in their network. And so the pricing agreement is designed to offer something unique, a discount off of a given tariff at the time of shipping. And as such, I think it's important for a shipper to know that as it's a pricing agreement, even though there may be a term attached to that, it's not a written in stone term. You know, I think maybe we could speak in that avenue a little more detail further down this conversation, but I think that's an important note. If you sign on for a 3-year term on a pricing agreement with FedEx, it does not mean that you are not to touch or manage your small parcel strategy or supply chain for 3 years.
Well, they don't, right? They touch it within the 3-year period.
Great point. That kind of goes back to the whole tariff scenario, right? So if you really sit down and read a pricing agreement, it's overwhelmingly written in favor of the carrier's best interest. And so invariably, you're going to see things like the carrier has the right to change their tariff at will, with or without notice.
Okay, so how often does that happen?
Great question, Jake. It seems to be with repeating frequency.
Okay.
The last 23 months or so have been crazy for the world. It's been hard on the carriers, too, to their defense. Well, historically, they reserve the right to kind of update, refresh their tariff on an annual basis. It's a thing called the general rate increase, or GRI is the lingo in the market, and that typically occurs around the start of the new year. But what the carriers have done repeatedly is just tweak, insert different billing methodologies or surcharge or adjust a fuel surcharge application or something like that periodically throughout the life cycle of a calendar year. So it's important to know that. It's a takeaway is that if you sign the dotted line on a pricing agreement with a carrier for 2022, that does not ensure you that your rates are static for that year. There will be change. And if you don't pay attention, if you don't have an ability to understand that and have visibility to it, you're going to be scratching your head at the end of the year wondering why transportation as a percentage of cost of goods shipped has gone up.
Yeah, great point. Mm-hmm. I know there's a misconception with shippers out there that when they're signing something with FedEx or UPS, that it is a contract and not an agreement. But we know that the carriers are changing the rates often, to your point. So even if there's a 3-year term on the agreement that they sign, they have the right to go back and negotiate. The carriers are doing it, to your point. They're negotiating or changing the rates throughout the year. So let's talk a little bit about agreements and when a business should get an agreement with the carriers. I know that there are some third parties out there that, for example, Shopify, that you can use their rates if you're on their platform. Mm-hmm. But at what point should a business work directly with FedEx or UPS or DHL or the USPS and have their own direct agreement?
You bet. I think that's a great question as well. You know, these point of sale solutions that, as you mentioned, you know, having access to some sort of discounted rate, that's great for somebody starting out, getting a feel for things. At some point in the evolution of your business, you're really going to start hitting your head on the transportation expense. And wow, how do I compete with the likes of free shipping? You know, how do I do that and stay cost competitive? So invariably, you have to go and source directly with carriers of your choosing. I think a good rule of thumb, you start to get into the $100,000 a year range. It's time to start looking at really sharpening the pencil at that point. You know, and I think it becomes more profound the larger you get.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then getting an agreement with a carrier. If you don't have any contacts at the carrier, how do you get that agreement? How do you get that started? Any suggestions?
Yeah. Yeah. It's another great question.
I'm full of great questions today. You just wait.
Yeah. There's a number of things you're full of today.
Oh. Shut your mouth.
So I think there's a couple avenues or channels to go down. One is, you know, you can simply call the 1-800-PICK-UPS or the equivalent toll-free number for FedEx or OnTrack or LaserShip or USPS. You can do that, and hopefully somebody will pick up on the other end and do that. You know, there are also some actual certified approved resellers in the marketplace. You know, so you could take a look at a company like a Worldwide Express or a Unishippers, and they play a valuable role in the marketplace for that very entry-level small company. They can oftentimes do a real nice job serving a shipper and offering a transportation rate that might be a little better than what they could get on their own at that time. But I think that's how you begin to kind of dip your toe in the pool. You call them and ask and begin to engage at that point, which is probably the way I would go if I were in their shoes. And you can go to, like I said, one of these potentially approved resellers, you know.
Or what about LinkedIn? LinkedIn's a great resource, right?
LinkedIn, good, for sure. You know, social media in general can be a good avenue. Absolutely. I would imagine, too, a lot of these small business owners are probably members of chambers of commerce or different trade associations or some sort of a professional networking service within the area. And that's a great way to get some ideas as well and talk and ask around, for sure.
Okay. So we've talked a little bit about some of the basics of a carrier agreement. Let's get into the meat, right? Let's get into the meat around carrier agreements and some of the pitfalls, for example. So there are some pitfalls with carrier agreements. What are some of the pitfalls that you see that are meaningful to talk about?
Well, they're super confusing.
Right. I remember when I first got into the industry, I remember seeing agreements that were maybe 12 to 14 pages long. Mm-hmm. And now I see agreements that are 30, 40, 50 pages long.
Yeah. And they can be even longer, Jake. They really can. So sometimes just the vagueness or the complexity or even the verbiage of the legalese inserted in can be rather confusing. Case in point, anyone who's ever ventured into this area and really opened up the pricing agreement and began to read, I challenge you to articulate to me an understanding of a FedEx earned discount or a UPS portfolio tier. And even more importantly, if you do understand it, what portion of your spend contributes to it?
Right.
Does it all? Does it not? you know, those are, that's the tip of the iceberg, really, with regard to that. So what I've typically seen is a general misunderstanding of even what that is supposed to mean, what goes into it, how that's impactful to your business, what are the pros, the cons of those things. And then the other thing that's interesting to me is you'll see these discounts, and they're always, you know, I think it's important, they're always discounts applied to a tariff at the time of shipping. So you have a 50% discount. 50% discount sounds good. That 50% discount will remain a 50% discount year over year, but don't forget it's being applied to a different tariff, a different rate with time.
Can we stop there for a sec? I think that is a big misconception with shippers. Is I got 50% off on my agreement. I'm pretty good. Next year, 50% still applies, of course. It's in the agreement, but it's not 50% off the same amount, to your point.
Correct.
Let's use an example from this year or last year. Do you have any that come to mind?
Sure. So we'll speak anecdotally for a minute here. So let's say you have that 50% discount and it's on ground residential. Okay. And you look and say, oh, that's great. So we go and we look at a rate and we say, okay, that rate today is $10. Hey, this is anecdotal. It's oversimplified and probably not even exactly right in a rate card. But you say 50% discount on that. Okay, that's $5. Okay, I'm paying $5. Don't forget, you have fuel surcharge that gets applied to that. Oh, don't forget, there's a residential surcharge that gets applied to that. Hey, there's a thing called delivery surcharge or an extended delivery surcharge. About 70% of the U.S. zip codes fall within that category. That's another surcharge. Then you have that fuel that gets assigned to all of that, right? Gets added on. So it adds up. But then you sit and say, okay, that 50% discount still occurs in 2022 after they announce the rate increase. But for that given package and that given destination, that rate went from $10 and published to $11, 10% increase. So now you were paying $5 on that net transportation. Now you're paying $5.50, the 10% increase.
Right.
But don't forget, fuel gets applied to that. That exponentially grows it. Residential surcharge is taking an increase. Delivery surcharge is taking an increase. And so pretty soon, it becomes a pretty big number. You know, and if you're not aware of that, if you're not adjusting your sales price, you're taking home less money.
So it sounds like what you're saying is one of the biggest pitfalls for shippers is being complacent with their agreement with all of these rate changes that happen.
Complacent and or, in my opinion, I think the real sin, relying on the shipper to tell you what the impact is.
Like a UPS or FedEx.
Correct.
Right.
And I'm not here to tell you or anyone that the carriers are dishonest. They're not. There's integrity there, but there's a deliberate approach to the marketplace. And they certainly do everything in the business world to manage information skillfully, present data in a way that's compelling and favors their position. And so it is not above them to creatively approach these things and provide analysis that is not directionally correct to a client. And it's unfortunate many of the shippers out there just don't have the knowledge or the tools, the analytics to look at it, to question it, to do their own math, confirm.
Would it be wise to use the phrase that these agreements are written with the carrier, not the shipper in mind?
Absolutely, to my previous point.
And then there's, I mean, you talked a little bit about some of the misunderstandings and things like that around accessorial fees. Mm-hmm. Accessorial fees are a big revenue center for the carriers, much more than they used to be, right?
They are. So
maybe let's touch on accessorials for a second. What is an accessorial fee?
So an accessorial or a surcharge is something the carrier is positioning as a specific additional charge associated with the characteristics of that given package. So for example, in the simplest terms, if you and I were to ship a package to a business, that's a commercial delivery, Now, if we turned and shipped that same package to your wife at the house, that's a residential delivery. Okay. The carriers would argue that servicing a residential market is less efficient. There's more cost associated with doing that. You say, what kind of costs? Well, typically with a commercial delivery, there's multiple packages going to that location. You imagine the business quadrant we're in right here. How many potential delivery stops in this building alone do you think the carriers make on a daily basis?
Yeah, a lot.
Right?
A lot of them.
And so when you think about the number of stops within this one building, as well as the number of packages, it equates down to a revenue per stop basis from the carrier's perspective. It's commercial delivery, high revenue per stop. You compare that to a residence, you know, maybe only one box is getting delivered to the house on the day. It has a tendency to be a smaller, lighter box than a commercial delivery, so it's lower revenue. You have the same expense of the same driver, the vehicle, the stop, the walk to the front door, the walk back. So it's a higher cost to serve. So at a high level, a surcharge or an accessorial is designed to apply an additional fee associated with the complexities or the expenses of that package. That is what the carriers want you to believe. There's another piece of that. The other piece is kind of a revenue management piece. So business people aren't dumb. They manage very effectively what they can understand and what they can quantify and analyze. You know, a 50% discount on a ground rate isn't hard to back in and do the math on. Where it becomes hard is the application of the surcharges and the accessorials and other billing methodologies. When we look at a macro level at a given shipper, surcharges, accessorials, other billing methodologies easily make up 25% of a total spend, sometimes upwards close to 40%, depending on the type of shipping characteristics we're talking about. You couple that with, you know, the world we live in right now. First of all, there's a supply and demand imbalance. And anybody that went through a basic economy class knows that when you have a shortage of supply and a high demand, prices go up, right? Look at the housing market here in Salt Lake City. It's case in point.
Right. Would it be appropriate to say that the carriers tend to focus on giving better discount percentages on transportation rates as opposed to accessorial charges?
In most cases, yes.
Because they can justify the accessorial charges in their minds by saying that it requires some additional process around it.
Correct. Let's carve out one as an example that's been particularly kind of attacked by the carriers as of late.
One what?
Accessorial.
One accessorial. Okay, so let's carve out one accessorial.
Let's go after additional handling.
Okay.
Okay. So first of all, additional handling surcharges are designed, they're supposed to be applied to packages that for a variety of different reasons aren't conveyable. So if you think about a FedEx, a UPS network, a USPS network, a regional carrier network, these companies have to process thousands and thousands and thousands of parcels per day.
Oh, I remember. I used to work the belt at FedEx.
And you must be able to convey as much of that as you possibly can. Some of these operations process 100,000 packages an hour. So if you imagine certain packages that aren't conveyable for some reason, too long, can't make corners around conveyor belts, too wide, doesn't fit on some conveyors, too heavy, do you really want an 80-pound box coming down a slide at you?
It'd
be
no
kind
way.
Of tough, right? Hey, imagine something that's not in corrugated. How about a 5-gallon bucket of paint? How about a trailer hitch? How about a muffler, a tire, a custom rim? These are all things that would traditionally fall in the additional handling category. Those packages, in essence, do cost the carrier more to process. They have to be handled manually. Now, if you are just a business owner and you're just trying to grow your business, you're trying to service your clients, you don't have this knowledge. You're not a small parcel geek like you or I that worked at the carrier and the operation and knows these things.
Sounds like business 101.
It is. It's business 101. But imagine it's business 101 with a blindfold on. Okay. If you're the shipper, you don't understand this. You don't have an articulate way to come back. And what are your options at that point? What do you do?
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know.
Okay. So there's a lot of pitfalls around the carrier agreements.
There's a boatload of them. And
you talked about a couple, but there's tons more.
There's a plethora of them.
Okay, so let's say your business. You have a carrier agreement. Mm-hmm. You know that there's pitfalls around that carrier agreement. How do you start the negotiating with the carriers? You go to them, you've seen a rate increase, you're paying more than you were last year or the year before. What do you do?
You must understand where your dollars are going when you're using a small parcel carrier. You need to understand that. Now, it's virtually impossible to gain the type of understanding you need by going out and looking at an invoice. It's virtually impossible. Invariably, you're going to have some haziness, a lack of understanding of what's going on. So my recommendation, you need to find a firm, a company that provides technology and provides you with the visibility to your spend in all of its myopic detail. That's the start. That's the first thing you must have in hand. The second piece is you need someone that understands what the heck that 35-page pricing agreement is telling you. There are a ton of pitfalls, as we previously talked about. There's going to be other types of little billing quirks in there, things like dimensional billing factor. Well, what the heck is that, right? Or minimum charge, or a rate cap, or a variety of things. So you need to take solid analytics and marry it beside an expert knowledge of the pricing agreement in question, or the pricing agreements in question, and really understand where you're at. Once you have that accomplished, now you're ready to begin thinking about how do you want to approach the market, what's important to you. And it's a very meaty subject.
So before we get into that, one thing I know is important is to know where you're going before you start the negotiation. That supports really what you were just saying, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't go into negotiation expecting to get the best discounts by just asking for the best discounts, incentives, and whatnot, right? You have to know the direction you're headed. You have to know what good looks like for you on the agreement, right? To all your point.
You do. You have to know what good looks like. That in itself is a bit of a dangerous statement, though. So when we say we know what good looks like, does that mean we need to know what a good discount looks like? Do we need to know what a good discount on an accessorial is? Do we need to know what are other like shippers? I would contend no, not so much on that piece. It's more, what does your package look like in the carrier network? How does the carrier view your business? Do you have an understanding of what their potential cost to serve your packages, your business is? And then you can gain some perspective as to how to potentially approach them or approach the market. But it becomes incredibly complex at that point. And if you don't have that expertise on staff, you're really kind of coming into a gunfight with a knife.
That's a great point. I think so. To rephrase my question, how do you know if your carrier agreement is good?
Great question. Okay. Sometimes a little thick. It takes a couple of questions, passes to get through.
No.
You know,
okay.
What I would encourage you to do, you need to find a consulting firm that does this for a living, that does this day in, day out, works with a variety of clients across multiple industry verticals and geographies and spend levels, preferably with a background specific to small parcel, someone who perhaps worked at the carriers, understands what it takes to move a package through a carrier network, responsible for maybe the other side of the desk, writing the contracts, controlling the negotiation. That's your best bet at really understanding, getting an idea of maybe what good looks like.
Right? Okay. Glenn, let's talk a little bit about a go-to-market strategy for negotiating with the carriers.
You bet. It's a meaty topic. I'm not sure that many shippers completely understand the reliance they have on the carrier they're sourcing with for the buying experience, their brand recognition. I think that's critical to consider. Imagine you're shipping a low-value iPhone case. Barely commoditized, right? There's a good chance that the buying experience isn't about which carrier you choose. And so your focus in an environment like that might be solely cost related. Hey, I want to find the cheapest way to get the stuff out there. My customers don't really care if they get it 3 days or 8 days. Not a big deal. That's one consideration. We go to the other side of the equation. We talk about a premium retailer with a high value sweater or handbag, or you name it. Okay. The delivery experience has a lot to do with the experience of buying that product.
And from my understanding, the delivery experience is almost always associated with the brand that they've bought from and rarely with the carrier. Is that correct?
I couldn't agree more. I really, really strongly agree with that. So I think it's, you know, we would never suggest you take your eye off the financial ball, but I think it has to be balanced with what type of experience you're wanting to provide your customers and a thorough knowledge of your market. When I say your market, whom are you competing with? What kind of experience are your competitors providing your customers from a visibility of transportation, free? The time that they get it, packaging it's in, when the client receives it, the buying experience. There's a lot of choices out there, particularly in this gig economy. I'll be the first to tell you, and I think anybody listening to this podcast could tell horror stories about different buying experiences they've had with different carriers. So that has to go into the equation on the go-to-market strategy in a big way. Perfect world? You know, you're one that you have operational and technological flexibilities that you can go out and selectively use a variety of different carriers, but very few companies have that complete flexibility.
So when negotiating with the carriers, you want to ignore the noise.
Ignore the noise, know your package characteristics, understand what your desired customer buying experience is, and align that accordingly with the marketplace. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So I have a couple of additional things I wanted to get into on this podcast. One of them was around what's the appropriate way to go through the process of potentially switching carriers. And I'm sure there's some pitfalls around there, right?
There's a number of them, yeah.
And one thing I would even ask you, Glenn, how do you even decide whether or not it makes sense to bring in the other carrier? At what point? Is there enough frustration? I mean, what point do you bring in another carrier?
I think as a shipper, you need to maintain integrity and credibility of your brand and your buying power. That's really important. I'm not one to advocate that you go out and you throw out a general tender or an RFP and you ask anyone and everyone to come in and bid on that business, all for the sake of creating this competitive environment. It might serve you one time. It might. But invariably, the non-incumbents are going to figure it out. And they're going to say, you know what? This is kind of a wasted exercise. We're just getting a market rate so that they go leverage it down with their incumbent. So what I really ask of a shipper, a client, before we get engaged is, truly, what are your barriers to making a carrier change? What are your concerns around it? If you were presented with a compelling proposal to make a change, how hard and painful would that be for you?
Okay.
What are the technology issues? What are the operational constraints? What about that buying experience? Does it align with your brand? right? Are you foolish enough to market a given carrier over another on your website? We proudly ship everything with carrier A.
Oh, we see that all the time.
Right? Those are, I hate to tell you, those are switching barriers, right? From the carrier perspective, they'd love to see that. So you have to be honest in that. And so I'm all for a good, honest, competitive environment. But all involved really must have a credible opportunity. And I think you owe providing that transparency to them.
Now, when potentially switching carriers, you have different folks in the organization that need to buy in, right? Because working with the carriers affects different departments, right?
You bet.
You've got operations folks that are used to the pickups and drop-offs, and you may have accounting and finance individuals that are used to certain terms and payment schedules and things like that. So usually, from my experience, when you are entertaining bringing another carrier, you want to have that ultimate goal that you talked about, which is, you know, making sure your brand is represented well, making sure the performance is there, that your customers are being delivered to, making sure that you're paying a fair rate. But you also have to make sure internally that everybody's in sync, right?
You do. You have to get all the stakeholders on board. And that's important. And maybe you have to get them on board sooner than later. Say, hey, here's what we're looking to do. Here's what I would like to go after. From my perspective, I'm not opposed to a carrier change. What am I missing?
Okay.
And make sure you have the organization aligned. The last thing you want to do is start to begin to make promises to a non-incumbent that you ultimately can't deliver on. Again, you may be okay this time, but invariably, you're going to really struggle in the years to come with bringing that carrier back to the table.
So you brought up a few minutes ago about co-branding with some of the carriers, putting their logos on your website and things like that. It made me think about some of the individuals and companies that I've talked to have been with one carrier for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
Would you recommend switching carriers every so often? Or if it's not broke, don't fix it?
Great. It's a really good question. So I used to manage pricing at the strategic level, you know, of the largest, most complex brands in the world. Very, very tough negotiators, very skilled procurement teams in doing that. One of the first things that I would do is I would try to gauge the risk associated with this given request. And it's pretty easy to research that piece of the equation, Jake. So when you say, if I, you know, there's a shipper that's been with a carrier for the last 25 years, I would have a tendency to think that there's probably pretty low risk in them making a change. Therefore, whatever they're asking for, I probably don't have to sharpen my pencil too much. Do a couple things, make them feel good, push back on some others. They'll grumble a little bit, they'll go away, and we got them for another 3 years. That's the reality. So if I were sitting in the other seat, if I were a shipper, I'd make a concerted effort to make a wholesale change in my sourcing every other cycle of a pricing agreement. So every 4 to 6 years, I would take a look at making a change. I think that's enough that you're not Chicken Little or that pain, you know, and no longer worth working with. But you, when you say, hey, look, I'm going to the market, I'm not afraid of making a change here, you have credibility.
That's okay. I'm glad you brought up that word. Credibility is the word that was going through my mind quite a bit. So from some of our conversations, we talked about how you need to establish credibility with the carriers. If you've been with one carrier for 20, 25 years, you haven't switched, the credibility of you going back and saying, hey, we're looking at making a switch, there's limited credibility there, right? There's another side of the credibility, though, right? Which is how you approach the carriers during the negotiation process. You know, we went to one extreme and talked about leaving one carrier for another, right? But even just going to them in the beginning for the negotiation process, it needs to be credible. I have an experience where I talked with a CEO of a company here about a year or two ago, and he said, we need some help figuring out what's the best solution for our company, whether it's different carriers, packaging type, things like that. How do we want to ship out our product? What service and all those things? One of the things that he said was, he said, we've really got the carriers in a good spot. Every 6 to 8 months, I bring both of them in pound my fist on the table, essentially, and tell them to negotiate between each other. And then whoever comes out alive with the best rate, that's the carrier that I'm going to use. We declined to do business with him because of that. And I think that's another extreme of having no credibility with the carriers. By the end of the conversation, though, with that CEO, he told me that the carriers will no longer move at all on his agreements. And he hasn't been able to get them to adjust his agreement in over a year, right? So it's kind of an extreme example, but how often should you go back to the carriers talking about that credibility? And what is credible enough to go back to the carriers? What's the reasoning? What's credible reasoning? I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's that whole dynamic between being kind of the boy that cried wolf, right? And really bring in a credible request. I think the anecdotal answer to your question is anytime there's a credible opportunity, you need to seize the moment. You need to take that. Now, there's a variety of credible events that happen. I'll lay some out. One classic example is that annual rate increase we talked about, right? That GRI. Hey, look, they reserve the right to change. You've got discounts applied to the tariff. You don't control the price of the tariff. You have a business to run, you know? So you've budgeted for 3%. And with those great analytics we talked about you needing, you come and find out, wow, I'm taking an 8.5%. Time to talk. And it's a credible time to talk. If you have good analytics, good visibility, and you see those events happening, those may be credible times to raise your hand and say, wait a minute, guys, what's going on? Why are you changing this, right? Now, the scope of that conversation may be much different than just bringing both carriers in to beat each other up. It might be, hey, carrier, what are you doing? You just increased my fuel by 20% and it's April. What's going on? Right. So maybe it's just around that discussion, but you're keeping it in check. You're being an educated consumer. Okay. Other credible events, you're owned by private equity. They're in acquisition mode. They make two or three more acquisitions to fold up underneath you and your business looks entirely different now. Great time to talk. Divestiture is another great time. You roll out a new product. You source from a new location. I could go on and on and on and on, but you have to have every time you go back to the market or to the carrier or carriers you're working with, it has to be pinned down on something credible. It can't just be an exercise for the sake of beating each other up. That is not building out a partnership.
So to summarize, would I be accurate by saying there's two main reasons to go back to the carriers? Changes in market conditions or changes in your shipper profile?
Yeah, or changes in your business conditions in general. Yes, yes.
Okay.
For sure.
That makes sense. So not just when the wind blows.
Correct. Operative word here is credibility.
Okay. I like that word. So we've talked a little bit about the negotiation process now and when and why it makes sense to change carriers or entertain different carriers. How long does it take typically to negotiate a carrier contract?
A full-blown go-to-market, multi-carrier engagement process can range from 9 to 15 weeks. The more complex, sometimes the longer that goes. On the other side, if it's just a slight mitigation of discussion around an increase, you know, they've imposed a new surcharge in April and it impacts you, that could be something you could resolve pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the general range I would consider.
Okay. Well, Glenn, thanks for educating us on carrier agreements and how to negotiate carrier agreements. This was really insightful for me. I knew some of these things, but there were some other really interesting things that you brought up here. Do you want to say anything, Glenn?
Oh, it was my pleasure, Jake. I always love talking about this with you. I think you're one of the few people that I can have this conversation with, and it's always fun. There's a lot of topics we could spend more time than anybody would care on a multitude of these topics we've discussed, but I think it was a pretty good high level.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you have any questions for Glenn, reach out to him. You can reach out to him on LinkedIn. It's Glenn Gooding. And a lot of people reach out to Glenn to just get insights on what's happening in the small parcel world and how to best navigate some of these changes and make sure that they have a best-in-class agreement. So feel free to reach out to Glenn. He's always willing to help people out on that.
I am, but we're not a one-man shop. It's not Glenn, it's iDrive. And so we have a great team here at iDrive. You reach out to iDrive, you're going to be taken care of.
And make sure to follow iDrive Logistics on LinkedIn for more insight. But thank you, everybody.
Take care.